Hey, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Today on the show, comedian actress Mary Lynn Rice-Cubb talks about how not to start a women's commune.
It was at the height of the market, so I bought this 3/4 acre with all this stuff on it. We all moved in together. Oh, we had the best time. We went to Bed Bath & Beyond. We bought all these towels. We bought all this toilet paper, soap, because there were a few bathrooms. There were the back bathroom had a steam shower because that's the one that leads out to the pool. 1, 2, 3, 4. There was a half bath, 4 bathrooms and 1 half bath. There was a library. One of the bedrooms was a library. We all put our books in there. They were in women's studies together. And I said, you guys are a hoot. You know about life. I want to live with you.
Today on the show, actress-comedian Mary Lynn Rice-Cubb talks about how not to start a women's commune. Stay close.
Hi, it's Mary Lynn Rice-Cubb. You're listening to Storyworthy.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. Whether you're a longtime fan of the show or a new listener, welcome to Storyworthy. Now, I hope you guys had a chance to listen to last week's story with comedy writer Chase Mitchell. Do you know Chase?
No.
Marilyn? He's done Story Smash. Maybe you might have been there when he was a contestant. But anyway, he tells this story. The title of it was Narrowly Avoiding Conflict. And it was about being in a karaoke bar in New York. And he's with his fiance. And she's kind of like fish out of water, her first time in New York City. And some guys make a remark to her inappropriately. And she turns to her fiance, Chase. She turns to Chase and she says, "Hey, that guy said this about me. What are you going to do about it?" And he goes up to the guy. And it was not pretty. Trouble. Like, serious.
Oh, my God.
So you guys go back and listen to Chase Mitchell last week. It's a really great story, but not today, because today I'm here with comedian and actress Mary Lynn Rice-Cubb, and she brings forth the topic, how not to start a woman's commune. And I got to tell you, Mary Lynn, if I hear one more story about how not to start a woman's commune.
This is a way to not do it.
Every week people come in and they talk about communes. No, this is unique. I mean, everything about it, the whole topic is unique.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm anxious to hear about it.
Okay.
I mean, I've never lived with, even in college, I had 3 roommates, you know. Okay, I was there 4 years. The last year I had like a single, but the other years, my roommates, 2 years was my sister.
Yeah.
And 1 year was like, whatever. So like, I've never really lived with other women. I mean, my daughter, but I mean,
right. Had you lived with boyfriends?
Yeah. And I've been married twice, so yeah.
I mean,
I've lived with.
Yeah. But yeah, I was similar. I didn't really have a lot of roommate situations.
Yeah, I never did.
I had a roommate. I moved out. This story is after a string of guys. I tried so hard to, every guy I dated, I was like, I love you. And each one was worse than the next. And the woman who was a big impetus for what I'm calling the women's commune, she and I had dated when we were in our 20s. I tried that too. I was like, oh, I'm done with men. Let me try to do this. We had a hot and heavy relationship. And then.
So you knew her.
I knew her.
But not the other people.
We hadn't talked for, there's only 3 people. Okay. So she and I will call her Tabitha, not her real name. Tabitha and I had a relationship.
Right.
We hadn't talked in 10 years. We're reacquainted. Wow. We're so mature. I was in the process of getting engaged. That blew up in my face. I was devastated. She was right there, my new old, but now we're friends. Everything's cool. She was there to pick up the pieces. I had a house that I bought, and she and I were like, oh, relationships suck. And she
introduced
me.
So that's like the beginning.
That's the beginning. She introduced me to her friend who was going through a divorce. We would sit around and drink wine, like, oh, wouldn't it be great if we all just moved in together?
Oh, my gosh. Okay, now, hold on. Don't tell me the whole story yet, because this is so compelling. I'm really anxious to hear this entire thing. But before we get to Marilyn's story, I did want to remind you guys to follow me over on those social medias. Would you do that at Storyworthy? And did you know I started another podcast? You know that, right? Screwed Up Stories with comedian Rachel O'Brien. Yes. So go over to screwedupstories.com, see what's happening there. And that would be really nice of you, actually. Because when you kick off a podcast, here's what you start with, Marilyn. You start with zero followers.
Yeah.
You see what I mean? And then it's 10 and 20. Like, it goes, like, incrementally slow in your head. You know, I'm looking and I'm thinking,
I just started a podcast, and you know what? I haven't looked.
Oh, wow. That might be smart.
Because I want to get in the flow of how I want to do it.
What's the name of it?
And log it in. It's called Marilyn. Right now it's on SoundCloud and iTunes.
I love it so much, Marilyn. Yeah. I'll help you in any way I can.
Thank you. I might call you for advice.
Yeah, I've learned some things for sure.
You helped me already just describing what you've been through and kind of ending up in this process and doing it this way. And
I've experienced. I am very experienced. I know. Awesome. It's so weird. It's funny because I've never really felt like I've been good at anything except maybe like waitressing, and like I was a flight attendant. Like I was always good at like customer service, but that never interested me. But this does interest me.
Yes.
And now, just because of the amount of hours I've put in, it's that whole 10,000 hours thing. I'm just good at it. I mean, there's no two ways about it. I might cut this. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
That's not the point. Hey, listen, I was talking to you about my little daughter, Alabama, who's 11, and she's turning 12, and you know what that means, right?
The Red Sea.
Oh, Jesus.
What does it mean?
You have a boy, clearly. You have a son. I have a daughter. But here's,
you have no idea what I live with. Can I come be with some ladies for a while? You guys can get me into the world of how ladies act. I live in a house with two men.
Do you have to do video games?
No.
I mean, I'm not good at them. Are they in the house?
Yes. They haven't taken over yet. My son goes on his iPad, and every once in a while, they'll go in Matt's office and do it.
Yeah. That's not bad, though.
It's not bad.
When I walk in somebody's house, and there's, like, all these boys watching video games.
One time I left town, now that you mention that, I left town, I came back, the Xbox was in the family room TV on the floor. I was like, this is not, you're not
taking over. I don't
want to
live in that house. Yeah. That's just, and there's, like, you look at, everything's violent, and people are screaming, and there's, like, wars and guns and armies. And everybody's so aggressive. I'm happy to have a girl. But like I said, this is the time that, you know, things are going to start changing for her. But I found this company. It's called Lola, L-O-L-A. And it's a female-founded company offering a line of organic tampons, liners, pads. I'm not whispering. I'm just saying that, well, my daughter happens to be in the other room, to be honest with you guys. So most major brands of feminine products use a mix of synthetic ingredients in their products, including rayon and polyester. And their feminine care products may also be treated with harsh chemicals, cleansing agents, stuff like that. Well, Lola products are 100% organic cotton with no added chemicals, fragrances, or synthetics or dyes. And I'm telling you, that is what I want for my child. Really, I want to start her off absolutely the right way. I don't want her putting anything additional in that area. You know what I mean? And again, Lola is founded by women. It's for women. And check this out. Every time you purchase something from Lola, they will donate feminine care products to homeless shelters across the United States. And here's the thing right now, you guys, you can get 40% off all your subscriptions by visiting mylola.com and entering the promo code STORYWORTHY. Again, you'll get 40% off all your subscriptions by visiting mylola.com and enter the promo code STORYWORTHY when you subscribe. Again, you guys, you're going to love Lola. Head over to mylola.com and enter the promo code STORYWORTHY. And I always thank you guys for supporting my sponsors. Hey, Marilyn, will you check these guys out, please?
Lola?
Yeah.
I like chemicals and stuff, but you know, I don't know if I want to change the ecosystem down there because it's used to chemicals.
Exactly, the vagina.
But I will. Things could change for me. Things could open up in a new way. I could have a different kind of a release, an
Did
emotional
you know
release.
That the vagina is a self-cleaning organ, so you just let it do its thing. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
It's all normal.
Right.
That's all I'm saying.
But you want to use a clean wipe every once in a while.
Yeah,
a clean, natural.
Yeah. Well,
I love that. It's incredible.
Those. Yeah,
anyone
helps.
Who can start a company and keep it going and sustain it with organic stuff, that's where we need to head. I mean, we have a messed up society with chemicals and everything.
I agree.
In our clothes,
I agree.
In our food.
I agree.
In our vagina pillows.
So no more. All right, you guys, she's here right now, Marilyn Rice Cubb. She is an actress and a comedian, and she's best known for portraying Chloe O'Brien in the Fox action thriller series 24. Now, Marilyn was also one of the original cast members on Mr. Show, and you've appeared with Kelsey Grammer on The Sketch Show.
Ooh.
No. Yeah, you did, right? Yeah.
That's an oldie. That's a deep cut.
Well, what I like about that is that you work with Kelsey Grammer, because I just think he's
well, that's putting it loosely. Yeah. I met him.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Was he around? He produced, yes.
I see. Interesting.
He was amazing to be around.
So it was called The Sketch Show on Fox Television.
Was he in the trenches when I had to leave and go cry because it wasn't going well, sketch shows?
Did he jump on his helicopter and go back to Malibu?
He sure did.
You were also on The King of Queens as a character named Priscilla, and you've also been in so many films, which I gotta tell you, man, so impressive, Marilyn, really. Legally Blonde 2, Sweet Home Alabama, Dude, Where's My Car, Man on the Moon, Punch Drunk Love, loved that movie,
Thank you. I mean, look at my credits.
The Anniversary Party, loved that movie. Absolutely adored that. And Little Miss Sunshine, I adored. My ex-husband worked on that.
Did he?
Yeah. And nice. Then I went to the rap party. I have the keychain with a little van. Do you remember that keychain?
Yes. I'm trying to remember if I went to the rap party.
It was in Hollywood.
Probably not. I'm very antisocial.
Velvet Margarita in Hollywood.
Oh.
You might have.
Look at you with the memories.
Look at the memories. And then you also were in Magnolia.
Yes.
Which was astounding.
Yes.
And then you've done all these different music videos for Beck and Weezer and Sheryl Crow, who I adore. And also you portrayed a blind woman in the film Road Trip.
These are all true.
I'm so impressed. Your career is so well-rounded, all these different things. So you must be always having fun. No, really.
I am. I've been very lucky isn't the right word. I've been, I guess lucky is the only word I can think of, to just do things that I'm drawn to and that are drawn to me. And things that were not a good fit, I kind of just got spit out from them, you know?
Well, it seems like you have so much preparedness. And so then these opportunities come around. And you just can fill different niches.
Oh, that's interesting. I like that. I'll accept that. I don't really think of myself as very prepared, but at this point...
Well, again, it's about the hours, though, no matter what.
Yes, that's right.
You've been in Hollywood for how long? 25 years.
I got very lucky early on and threw myself into it, and I was very... I'm more prepared now than I ever have been.
Yeah.
But I had a certain fearlessness when I first moved here with being on stage and being in the room. And I don't know. I think there was a certain internal conflict that came out of me that really worked for me early on.
Wow.
Where
that's
I was
great.
The weirdo and the...
But it must have had confidence then, because it's hard for people to not try to portray a happy, friendly person, even if they're not, or if they don't want to be that.
It was very organic, and I would call it very neurotic. I had an inner need to express myself that propelled me forward.
Which is an art.
I very much approached it as an art and my life as an art, and I went to art school. Like, had I moved to LA with a stack of headshots and gone, all right, I'm going to do this methodically, it would not have happened. I just sort of followed my urge and my need to...
That's very mature. That's very mature, because most people come out here and they don't have that wherewithal. And also, it's very... it makes you be remembered. It makes you stand out. It makes you different, because you're confident and you're being yourself, and most people can't do that.
I will accept this from you, but I've never looked at it that way. I always thought I was like, oh, I'm crazy, and I'm just throwing stuff against a wall and putting it out there. I would say, I don't know if I would call myself mature. I would say neurotic. I'll give myself a little bit courageous.
Yeah.
I followed what I wanted to do.
You were on brand.
I guess so. I was on brand before brand was even a thing.
You've been trending upwards for 2 decades. Folks, you can find Marilyn over on Twitter at Marilyn Rice Cub. I'm going to spell it for you because I'm a giver. Marilynn. And here we go. RAJSKUB. Oh, and one more thing you have going on, this new podcast called Marilyn, Marilyn. So you guys check that out over on Apple Podcasts and wherever you listen to your podcasts. All right, you guys, wherever you are, put your hands together for Marilyn Rice Cub.
Okay, so where did I was leaning into it before. Where was I going with that? I said...
So you were with the girl, you met the girl, you started dating her, and she introduced you to...
Okay, so we've all... Her friend, we'll say Tabitha and Melissa. Her friend Melissa was going through a divorce, and she had a child, and Tabitha... was in, I thought, a long-term relationship, but then it turns out she jumped on the bandwagon and was like, I'm going to break up too. And we all would have these sessions, you know, these witches and bitches. And we just got together and we said, we had dogs, you know, each of us had a dog. And now I have to remember the fake names that I gave people. Tabitha and Melissa had a pug, a male pug that used to pee on everything. When we started the Women's Commune, that was, the dogs came with us. So we said we should get a house together. And I was working on TV at this time. It was at the height of 24. So I had some TV money. And Tabitha was with her. This was early on when people were flipping properties and they would buy condos and they would redo them. And they, you know, they were reading Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And I said, you guys know so much about finance and you're real estate moguls and you should, I have this money, I need to invest and we should all move in together. And Tabitha said, great, I'm going to help you do that. And ended up buying this property in the West Valley, way north on the 101, 3/4 acre. I remember going in and looking at it because I was coming from the beach from a small place in Venice and looking at it and looking around and there were mosaics and there were gold fixtures and there was a cage with birds in the back. There was a saltwater pool. There was a tennis court. There was a back house. And I looked at Tabitha, who I had this tendency to think, oh, she must know better, right? So I'm sort of looking back on it, and not at the time, I didn't know. I was like giving my power to this person, like, oh, can I buy this house? And she said, sure. Meanwhile, the money that I was making hadn't come in yet. So I actually borrowed money from Melissa's ex-husband. I said, I'm going to owe you what I need for this down payment, you know, because we got to do it now. We found this place and we got to find, it was at the height of the market. So I bought this 3/4 acre with all this stuff on it. We all moved in together. Oh, we had the best time. We went to Bed Bath & Beyond. We bought all these towels. We bought all this toilet paper, soap, because there were a few bathrooms. There were the back bathroom had a steam shower because that's the one that leads out to the pool. 1, 2, 3, 4. There was a half bath, 4 bathrooms and 1 half bath. It was shaped in a horseshoe and the floors were marble. Maybe they were granite. In my mind, they were marble, but just grand. There was a huge, big foyer. There was a library. One of the bedrooms was a library. We all put our books in there. They were in women's studies together. And I said, you guys are a hoot. You know about life. I want to live with you. And Melissa had a young daughter. And I said, yeah, come in here. Paint your room bubblegum pink. Let me give you my pink desk. Why don't you have that in your room? Meanwhile, I'm paying for everything, but I just think this is like totally normal. Why wouldn't I? I have the money. You guys should live here. As time went on, I mean, they would sort of pay for stuff, but no one was really paying me rent. You know, I don't care about that. What's rent? Like, we'll figure out the details later. Let's just do the fun part. Let's have wine tastings. One night we just burned books for the fun of it because we were talking about, you know, out by the pool, we just started a fire. We would have these powwows. We would make dinners together. And then didn't take that long, probably a few months before I realized like, wow, it's pretty expensive to have a gardener. And then Tabitha one day would be like, well, I talked to these guys, the roof needs replacing. And I would just trust her and trust the bidding that came in. And I was like, yeah, the roof needs to be replaced. And so Tabitha, who I thought had this long-term relationship, like I said, she was going through a divorce, and I can't explain my headspace. I had gone through a really bad breakup, and I guess some part of me was open to her, and she was angling hardcore for me, but we never blatantly discussed it. But we slept in the same bedroom, and we ended up like getting the same laptop. I just let her come into my life. And to the point where it was like, we're getting closer and closer. And I was like, oh, I trust you. I'm close to you. But it wasn't that hot and heavy relationship that we had 10 years ago. I wasn't even really attracted to her at this point. But it's almost like I felt bad or guilty telling her that, because then Tabitha went through a divorce to get closer to me again. And then, you know, she was like taking it slow, like maybe this is going to work out. We're sleeping next to each other, but sort of as friends, but it's unspoken and who knows. And then, you know, occasionally she would try to make a move on me and I would never respond. And then it just got to the point where it was like so stilted and we were having all these like experiences with each other, but then she and I weren't really being honest with each other. And I just, at one point she said something about us having a relationship together. And I said, well, we're not having sex. Like, I don't, and it was very loaded and I felt terrible about it. And it was this mixture. It seems crazy now to describe it like this, but she turned to me and she was like, that's okay. I'll wait. Like, she's going to wait for me. And I started panicking, and I would wake up in the middle of the night and like walk around the neighborhood and then this was a turning point for me, was when I started having dreams that I was in jail. I remember she tried to take care of me when I was sick. She would try to insert herself in places. You know what I mean? Because we lived together and we were roommates, but she was angling for something more because she just simply decided that that's what was going to happen. So she would do things like make me a smoothie, or if my call time was at 6, she would get up and try to help me like a wife or something. So there were these roles being filled that I didn't really ask for, but I was too weak to sort of stand up for myself. And I was like, no, I care about her and I do trust her. So if this is what she wants to do, but I didn't want her to do that. And it felt very bad. And then I remember her one time buying me this stuff when I got sick. And I was just like, I didn't even have the ability to go, yeah, I just want to, I think it's because I was vulnerable and coming from this other relationship and I just didn't stand up for myself. And then we were too far into it for me to set up just some simple boundaries. So I said, you know, I don't know why, that's funny how you remember these little details, but I remember she gave me like a breathe right strip, and I don't get stuff like that when I'm sick. It just like when someone's in your space, and I was like, I don't want anyone to touch me or talk to me right now. I just have a bad cold. Like, I really don't feel like putting a breathe right strip on. And I remember her getting really angry and like throwing the medicine that she got across the room. Like, oh, like, you're not going to let me take care of you. And it's just like, what is happening here? Like, we're going down this weird road and I'm starting to feel trapped. And the other roommate, who was more like normal, more of my confidant, well, at the same time, she wasn't working, and she was, her last job was waiting tables, but she'd be like, I have, my elbow hurts, and so I can't really work right now. And for some reason, everyone had a dog. Like, Tabitha brought this chihuahua into the house. The chihuahua was older, but then she had such a bleeding heart and cared so much that she got a bulldog. But it wasn't just any bulldog. It was a bulldog that didn't have an anus. So she had to fly to Florida and fly the dog back and have an operation for this dog, so that by the time it got to us, it was recovering from having an anus put in. It was leaking all over the house. Ugh. Melissa had the pug, and the pug was a boy, so the pug was marking everywhere. So we had the bulldog, the chihuahua, and then of course, you know, I had to get a dog. So she picked out a poodle for me, and then it was a battle between the female and the male, and the males peeing everywhere. And you know, the more surfacey things that were happening is I was trying to decorate the house, but it was so humongous and I was so in over my head that I would spend, you know, $30,000 and it would only decorate one part of the house. And then my style was like different than hers, and she brought her like Jetsons modern furniture in there, which didn't go with the house at all. And like, we were just crazy. So it got to the point where and by the way, I'm picturing the kitchen now. There was a bread warmer, and there was the things that you have. There's a separate sink it was a chef's kitchen. So it had this big long sink with a sprayer like you would have in a restaurant, and a walk-in wine, like totally unnecessary. But we filled the house with crap. And I'll never forget those trips to getting the towels and the toilet paper and all that. Got to the point where I was walking around, started having nightmares where I couldn't breathe, where I was sent to jail with my sister. But I mean, so blatant, the symbolism, where I'm looking out a small window and there's bars and I can see outside, and it was my sister that got us in the jail, but I was the one that was responsible for getting us out. And I started having these dreams, and I was like, this, I got to do something. So I remember, you know, telling her that it's not working, and I don't remember any of the specifics verbally. I just remember the energy of it. And I remember my own, what I'm calling weakness to her aggressiveness, where I was just wanting to be reasonable and wanting to be calm. And something inside of me was like, no, you just need to like yell back at her that it's not working and not let her tear you down. And I remember being in the bedroom, and a voice inside of me was like, just get her out of the bedroom. And I can't even tell you what we were arguing about at this point. Probably her telling me that she used to tell me I'm not generous and I'm not a very giving person and I'm pulling away from her and I'm not like, that's what it was. And I wasn't, you know, doing what we agreed to do. And I just was like, again, my intuition was like, start yelling at her now. And I just remember energetically yelling her out into the back. And for some reason, it must have been like the Santa Anas. It was an uncommonly windy day. And I remember it was like that movie, The Seventh Seal. The wind started going around in a circle. And all the dogs were out there barking when we were arguing. I feel like she had a motorcycle at that time. And we were yelling. And the culmination of that, it ended with her going into the back house. So that the first phase one was me getting her into the back house, right? And just yelling and standing my ground. And because I think before that things were tense, and I don't know why I'm like so passive and reactive that I was almost suggesting that I go in the back house. So I'm going to give these women and their dogs in the place that I'm paying for. You know what I mean? I wanted to like hide and go away. So this was a lesson in me making bad decisions, but going through this, I don't know why we, you know, create these situations for ourselves so that I had to stand up for myself. She ended up going in the back house. She was sulking. I remember these little signposts of what happened. We had during that time gone to this New Age church and we sat together, and I remember Tabitha praying and crying and just, you know, playing like she was rejected, because what card did she have left to play? And sort of finally a few more months, and there's a whole other side story of different properties that I had invested with her that I had to get her off the paperwork, but she eventually left and went to New Orleans, where she and I had invested in properties together. That was a whole other thing, which I found out later because I just trusted her. She was like, yeah, I'll get 20% when we rent this place. Well, they never rented, and she wanted money back of money we hadn't made. And a real estate agent later was like, yeah, that's 5 or 6% that you pay somebody for doing what she did, finding the places, talking me into investing and all that stuff. So it was extricating myself from that. And then she finally just left. Now she was, I knew she had dated men before, but she was in a long-term relationship for 10 years. But what I heard, the end of the story was, Melissa, the one with the elbow who couldn't wait tables, yeah, she just sort of started not talking to me. I think there was some shame involved where hers and I, our relationship kind of petered out in a normal fashion where we sort of talked to each other. She was avoiding me. I was trying to help her. I ended up paying her as an assistant at some point for this, just to try to help her. But then it had this reverse effect where she never talked to me and treated me like I was the bad guy. The whole situation was just backwards. And then Tabitha left, moved to New Orleans, ended up meeting a trumpet player for the Army, who through Yahoo Personals, getting pregnant with him within 6 to 8 months of meeting him. And I knew this from her ex, who saw a picture of her on Facebook, and I saw a picture of the baby once, and since then have never seen, never heard from her again.
I think you're lucky that you never heard from her again.
So lucky.
I mean, this is an incredible story, Marilyn. It's an incredible story because it's like, and it doesn't even have to be that story, but it's the whole thing when we get wrapped up with people, we know it's not good for us,
yes,
but we keep going down the path because we don't know how to use our words and just speak up. And so we just let it get more entangled. People are engaged and get married all the time.
Oh my God.
Because it's easier.
Just go through with it.
It's easier to get divorced later than to break up now. You know, people to break up an engagement would be almost impossible. And it's just that kind of a thing where sooner or later, I can't believe it didn't end when you backed her out of the room and then she ended up being in the guest house, that it took several more months.
Yes.
I just can't believe it. So obviously you weren't in therapy at that time.
No.
I'm so sorry. Because I think that any therapist could have read this like within... Did you have family members you were talking to?
You know, funny you should mention that. What did they tell you? She and I, this is so embarrassing because we weren't even really a couple, but she had decided we were going to be a couple. So we went to her therapist, couples therapy together. No, it wasn't her therapist. But the therapist it was her therapist, because the therapist she had gone to and convinced the therapist that she was this financial wizard and this altruistic person. She was very good at projecting this image, and the therapist sort of took her side.
Therapists do that all the time. It's
and
just
didn't
because,
understand really what she was doing.
Therapists are, just because they're, well, you know this, just because their title is a therapist doesn't mean they're good at what they do, and they can be very bad at what they do.
Yes.
I mean, I've had a couple of therapists that are like, you're not getting it. Like, I'm not crazy. This isn't appropriate. You know, it's not right. So I think that that happens all the time. So now you're in her space, as it were. And so what did that therapist say? You guys got to work on it.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. So do you have brothers and sisters? You have a sister, right?
I have two older sisters.
And did they know what was going on?
Oh, I didn't talk to them about it. I remember visiting home, and we had given each other rings at one point.
All three of you?
No.
Just the two of you. Just you and
Tabitha. Just the two of us. And I never explained it to my family. But I think that was part of like the push of like, oh, I'm doing this. But there was no, it wasn't worked out.
Who did you borrow the money from before the money came in from 24? Who were you borrowing money from to buy this house?
Melissa's ex-husband.
Ay, ay, ay. And Melissa.
And as soon as my checks came back in, I paid him back.
That's good.
But it was like so messed up. Like, why are you going to do that? It was so unnecessary.
Well,
you don't have the money, but at that time, it seemed normalized. Like, oh, no, people do this all the time. As soon as it gets in, you pay. And then you have this great property. You have this great investment.
How old was Melissa's child?
She was, I think, around 9 at the time. Wow. 9 or 10.
What a crazy environment for her to, you know.
Really
it's crazy. All nuts. It's all nuts.
It's all nuts.
And 3/4 acre is a good amount of property, especially here in Los Angeles. And so
it was huge.
Who lived in it before? Do you know?
It was a family. It was a couple and one kid, a baby, and they moved out. I don't remember why they moved out, but she had a cage, an aviary in the backyard.
It's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
I knew somebody that had an aviary and a coyote got in. And what happened was that didn't necessarily kill all the birds by eating them, but freaked them out so bad that they killed themselves banging on the flipping walls, man.
I know, right? Would rather them be eaten.
I know. Sorry to bring that little note to the table.
I like it.
So let me ask you, do you think your job at the time had anything to do with your headspace?
Yes. Something I wrote down a couple seconds ago, we were talking about something, is that I had low self-esteem to the point where I would make, when you're talking about therapists.
Yeah.
I would always make someone else the expert. I would never think that I knew better than someone that was supposed to be the expert. So I think I was emotionally vulnerable. I was tired of not having relationships work out. And I also thought that she had some expertise to know finances. And I just was susceptible to her particular brand of
amazing,
you know, whatever you want to call it, emotionally blackmailing or bullying me. And
how long was the whole thing from the time you moved into the house until the time you got rid of the house?
I was in that house. God, it seems like so long, but it really wasn't a long time. Probably in that house, maybe, oh my God, I have no sense of time. Was it 3? It was under 5 years.
It's still a good amount of time because it's, you know, and did you lose a lot of money then because you bought at the top?
Oh God, yeah. When the ladies moved out, I remember a guy who worked on 24, worked in wardrobe. He was looking for a place. He is gay, and he ended up moving into the back house. That was a really sweet, calm time. Because,
oh, that's good.
Because he paid me rent, and I remember
it was normal.
It was normal, and my dogs would run out to him in the morning, and we would have coffee together. But I was in this big, gigantic house.
At that point alone.
Yes. And ended up my now husband, so a lot happened in that house. He and I, our baby was there.
Oh, wow.
But then by that time I was losing so much money in the house and the market had crashed. So by the point where I actually had sort of a, you know, the nuclear family unit in place, which I didn't think was going to happen for me. That's a whole other crazy story. But, then we had to move because I couldn't pay for it. I actually had to let it default. I don't know if you know about that, have had any experience or know anybody, but like, it wasn't a foreclosure. It was a short
sale. No, it was a short sale.
Short sale.
I lost $140,000 on a property in Vegas.
So you know what I'm talking about.
And I short sold it.
If you remember this, my tax guy, he said, you have to default on paying your bills in order to get the attention from the bank.
Yeah, 3 months. You have to.
And then in California,
it's a sickening feeling.
Oh my gosh, it's the worst.
It is. I thought my father would just, and he already passed away, but I just thought my dad would roll over in his grave if he knew I was not paying the mortgage. Like, this is so blatantly wrong.
You know what? Now I'm sort of getting the timing back. It took me a couple of years of being recommended to do that, and I couldn't do it. So I was just bleeding money.
I know.
And I was paying for that property manager, the pool, the gardener.
It's too much. The upkeep is crazy. And then
you're on top of the inflated price of the property.
And you're on set for 12 hours a day. You're not even there.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry you got so suckered into that. I mean, it just all seems so out of your brand. Like, it doesn't seem like you would have gone down that that path. You're just so bright now. Like, you seem really put together and that wouldn't have happened to you. So this is very vulnerable to share, seriously. And when you're telling the story, what hits, because I hear a lot of stories, what hits me is when you had that epiphany and you had the dream about your sister saying to you, turn around and shout back. Use your words, Mary Lynn. Stand up. Say something. And then, you know, you're in that bedroom and she kind of backs you in there. And then that moment just made my stomach drop because we've all been there. In that moment where you've got to fucking make a choice, man. You've got to change the situation.
And fight.
You do. It's like when the guy and the girl split up and she goes in the airport. Well, you know what? You got to get out of cab and run into the airport.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is.
You have those moments where it's like, oh, it's go time now.
Yes. I'm just sorry it
didn't end
that day.
Well, it's where you started by when you said when people go along with things, it's those moments where we have to listen to ourselves because I think our tendency is to be like, oh, no, it'll be okay.
Well,
like, we don't want to cause trouble.
When you want to play house, you know, you guys want to play house and go shopping. And those are all fun things. But, you know, it all comes down to like delayed gratification. And you guys thought you were going to step over all the middle steps of getting to that place of playing house.
Yes.
And not going through any of the emotional stuff beforehand. So when she turns to you and says, like, do you not think I should take care of you? Or that's what I do. That's my job. You know, like, I got to take care of you. And throws that medicine across the room. That's crazy pants.
Crazy pants.
Well, I'm so glad you're okay now.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for sharing the story, really.
It was a lot of fun.
Tremendous. I really appreciate it. You guys, definitely go over to Twitter and tell Mary Lynn that you enjoyed her story over there on Twitter at Mary Lynn Rice Cub, and then follow me over there as well at Storyworthy. All right, you guys, I got to wrap it up right about now. I want to give a big shout out to all the sponsors on the show today. Really, you guys, when you support my sponsors, then you're supporting me and my child, and I appreciate it so very much. One more time, you guys, on behalf of the very talented Mary Lynn Rice Cub, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
My name is Christine Blackburn, saying that make it a Storyworthy week. To the rear, that you can follow me, follow me. I'll take you down to the river. Follow me, follow me. I'll keep you silent. Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.